I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Are you tired of your kids fighting? Do you need to handle sibling rivalry? Need some help, handling sibling rivalry? Join us today to help you tackle these issues is parenting expert Amy McCready. Amy founded Positive Parenting Solutions, Inc. in 2004 and developed a popular and successful breakthrough course that has changed the lives of thousands of parents through in-person seminars, speeches, and online parenting training webinars. Due to demand from parents around the country and abroad, Positive Parenting Solutions was developed in 2008 to give parents everywhere the skills, knowledge, and tools to correct their children's misbehaviors permanently without nagging, reminding, or yelling. She speaks to them one-on-one through the most advanced and thorough Web 2.0 parenting courses available today. Amy McCready is frequently asked to provide expert parenting advice for print and online parenting articles. She is a sought-after speaker, writer, parenting coach, trainer, and most importantly, mom. Amy, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm delighted to be here with you.
I'm so glad to have you, Amy. You know, it's funny. My daughter is 5 and a half, and she's an only child, and she loves the Berenstain Bears. And I was reading a book to her the other day called The Blame Game, and the whole book was about how Mama Bear was getting fed up because the two cubs kept fighting. It's her fault. It's his fault. It's her fault. And my daughter looked at me and said, "Why are they fighting all the time?" And I said, "Oh, that's just what, you know, brothers, sisters, or sisters, and sisters, you know, that's just what they do." And she said, "Oh." And so I think that, you know, what I want to hear from you is how much is normal, and then how do you know when you're in more dangerous territory?
That's a great question, and you're right. Sibling rivalry is perfectly normal. And when you think about it from our kids' perspective, now you have a daughter, and she's really the center of your universe. She gets all your time and attention. But imagine, you know, bringing another child into the mix, and all of a sudden she has to share your time. This new baby, you know, has a dirty diaper, needs to be fed, and all of a sudden mom and dad are giving the new baby a whole lot of attention. So from the beginning, it makes sense that some competition and some rivalry will exist. But to your point, you have to kind of think about, okay, this is normal, and when this is going to kind of have to move this. So,
okay. Now, you know, I like that you brought up the new baby, and if we could just talk about that for a moment, are there things that you can do when there is a new baby to prepare your child so that way perhaps there'll be less sibling rivalry as they grow older, at least help them adjust in the beginning?
Yes, there are a lot of things, and to that point, there are a lot of things that parents do, not even realizing it, that makes sibling rivalry worse.
Oh my gosh, I was going to ask you about that. That's so funny.
Yes, well, but let's talk about before the baby comes, because, yeah, okay. More that you can prepare them, help them, understand as best they can, role play with baby dolls, practice, the more you can get once the baby comes, have the older sibling be caring for the child, that she feels like she has a really meaningful part in the whole process, that can all help. But even with all of that good stuff, there's still just some inherent, you know, issues with competition that are going to come into play. And I mentioned that there are things that parents do that they don't even realize it. Well, a couple of things that they do is, first, you know, kind of labeling kids.
Oh, yeah.
Believe it or not, that really contributes to sibling rivalry because, you know, when you label one as the smart one, inherently the other one is the not-so-smart one. He's my athletic one. When you compare kids to each other, you know, that just really festers that sense of competition. The other thing that parents do very often, particularly with kids that are similar in age, is they tend to sort of treat them as a group. And so, you know, the activities, if it's mom playing a game with the kids, it's both kids together. Or, you know, they tend to be just lumped together very often for, really, efficiency, if for no other reason. But one of the things that parents can do is really make a point of spending one-on-one time with each child. And even just 10 minutes a day of one-on-one with each child when the other siblings are around just gives the child a huge dose of positive attention, just kind of fills their attention basket so they don't have to compete so much for your attention.
Oh, I love that. I love the attention basket. That's great.
Yeah, because, you know, let's face it, our kids have an attention basket, and we need to fill it So we can either spill it in proactive, positive ways, or they're going to get our attention one way or another. And very often, it'll be through, you know, attention-seeking, like whining or clinging or helplessness, or it'll be with sibling fighting. Sibling fighting is a great way to get the parents involved, because naturally, when they fight, you know, what do? We come in and we get involved and we figure out who started it and, you know, what the consequences should be. So it's really a very effective strategy on their part to kind of pull us into, you know, giving them attention for negative behaviors.
Yeah, you know, and what's interesting is when the parents do get involved, they can do something good or they can do something that's not so good. I mean, I have this memory. I mean, I'm 42. I was like maybe 8. And my sister borrowed one of my books. They used to collect. You remember the Snoopy and Charlie Brown books they used to have? I don't know. But anyway, I used to love those.
Oh, sure.
And so my sister borrowed one, and she would dog-ear the pages. And for some reason, that just irritated me. So I was like, that's my book. Don't do it. She's like, I can do what I want. And my sister and I were just fighting and yelling. My mother actually came in. She actually took the book. She tore it in half and was like, that's it, no more book. And then afterwards, like, she realized, oh, my gosh, you know, she took me to the store and got me another book, but that's not a good thing to do. Sorry, Mom. Well, actually, she's in heaven now, but still, I mean, that just was not a good thing to do, and she felt really badly about it, but I can see as a mom now how you can lose your temper, you know, and just do something that you wish. I mean, I saw as soon as she did it, she wished she hadn't done it. Do you deal with that a lot where parents say, oh, my gosh, I did this really bad thing?
Oh, absolutely. And your mom's reaction was one of just being pushed to the brink. You know,
yes.
You girls have probably been fighting all day, and,
yes.
You know, it was like, that's it. Fine.
Just
take half of the book. I've had it.
Yeah.
So
forget it.
It's a perfectly understandable reaction.
Okay.
But, you know, you mentioned, you know, parents getting involved in kids' fights, and that can either be constructive or destructive. And
yes.
We really encourage parents to stay out of the kids fighting as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is so often when parents get involved, it's to figure out who's at fault, who started it. You know,
mm-hmm.
One person gets sent to their room and really set up a situation of sort of victim and aggressor.
Okay.
And what happens is kids start to take on these roles of the victim and the aggressor. So the victim finds that it's really profitable to be the victim. So the victim may kind of instigate brother or sister. Finally, you know, brother or sister has had it and whacks them on the head. And then, you know, there's this big scene and the victim has been hurt once again. Mom rushes in to, you know, solve the problem. And so, you know, the victim can find a big payoff in being a victim. And then the aggressor becomes kind of the bully. And so the more we get involved and try to figure out who's at fault and who did what, we're really establishing and perpetuating those victim and aggressor roles, and they can, you know, really, you know, overflow into other areas of their lives. So
now that goes back to the labels, too. Because in my family, my brother was labeled, he was a difficult child, no matter what, and our challenging. He got labeled as the challenging one. And I was the angelic one, because I was always afraid to get in trouble, so I just, you know, did what I was supposed to do, because I didn't want them to treat me like him. So then you're right, so then I might set him up. And then even
exactly.
If it was my fault, immediately, well, he's the bad one. So that, yeah, I've apologized. Because I felt bad about that, you know?
Yeah, and that happens all the time. I mean, even in my own house, I have two boys. They're 14 and 12. And one tends to be a little bit more attention-seeking of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll needle him a little bit and instigate, and the other one will take it for a while and then just blow up. Well, if I come in at the point where the other one just blows up, I think, well, he just hit him. What, you know, he has
yes.
to have a consequence for that, but you don't know what happened, you know, preceding that event. I think the other thing that we do when we get involved in our kids' arguments and fights is that we really rob them of the opportunity to learn to resolve conflict on their own. You know, if we're always coming in to be judge and jury, they never learn those conflict resolution skills, and that's part of our job is to help them learn that process.
Now, how can they learn conflict resolution skills? Would that be something the parents would do, or is there someone they can go and talk to about that, or how does that work?
Well, it's primarily the parents' job, but the first thing, we really talk about, you know, the four-step process as it relates to sibling rivalry and competition.
Okay.
And the first step in the process is to ignore the fight.
Okay.
And that is really, really
hard for parents because we instinctively can't stand to hear our kids fight. It just goes against our grain of family harmony, and it's really hard. But if we can really force ourselves to ignore the fight, you will be surprised. In 75% of the situations, either the argument will just sort of fizzle out, or they'll figure it out on their own. But if our kids are accustomed to us getting involved, we kind of have to let them know up front and say, you know what, guys, you guys are really growing up, and I really feel like you can resolve a lot of your own fights. So in the future, when you guys are fighting, it's going to be your deal. I'm not going to get involved. And so that sort of puts them on notice that you're not getting involved anymore.
Oh, that's
so
true.
It really works. And so then when they start fighting, as much as you want to go get involved, you just resist the temptation and stay out of it. And you need to stay out of the room, too, because if you're in the same room with them, they'll try to suck you into it, right?
Oh, definitely.
So stay out of the room and let it go. Now, of course, if you feel like there's bodily harm or physical damage that's going to take place, you're going to have to get involved. But I always tell parents that, you know, just start with 5 minutes. Wait 5 minutes and don't go in. And then, you know, just sort of extend the time before you go in to get involved. And it's so liberating for parents to know that they don't have to get involved and resolve every little thing that's going on in the house.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Now, you mentioned the physical, and I'm wondering, how often do you hear from parents that their children are also, you know, not just like, you know, tackling each other, but really, you know, physically hitting and hurting each other?
Well, that does happen. And, you know, it really depends on the age of the child.
Okay.
Of course, if it's a baby or a child who can't, you know, who isn't mobile, then you have to come in and remove the younger child from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
However, very often, it's a situation where they're fighting, but one can very easily pick themselves up and walk out of the room. You know, you have a choice to participate in the fight or not. And that's one of the things that we talk about is, you know, what I mentioned there were four strategies.
Yes. So
jumping to the fourth strategy, it's called all in the same boat. And all in the same boat means I don't care who started it. All that matters is who participates. So if you are participating in the fight, you're a willing participant. And so then everybody is going to experience the same consequence.
Oh.
So a part of the process is training. And so you want to train your kids, but you don't have to stay there. You know, if somebody is hitting you, you don't have to stay there and take it. You get up and you walk away, as opposed to, you know, engaging in the power struggle.
I see. So we talked about the first one.
Right. So ignoring was the first.
Ignoring was the first. And then what's the second?
Well, the second strategy is sort of tandem with ignoring. If you're going to ignore the fight, we kind of have to equip them with the skills on how to resolve the conflicts on their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the, you know, again, in our course, which we spend a lot of time on this, we teach kids those conflict resolution skills. One of them is assertively using their words. It might be, you know, getting up and walking away, knowing what words to use. You know, there are a number of different conflict resolution strategies that we talk about, using I feel statements, you know, and so saying, you're such a jerk, you always do this. You start using I feel angry, I feel hurt when you take my stuff, and I don't want you to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of forces kids to own their feelings. So anyway, there are a lot of training strategies that we use to help kids resolve their conflicts, and these are lifelong strategies that they'll be using with their spouse down the road.
Yeah, that's really important. And what's the third one?
The third one is called helpful adult intervention.
Oh, okay.
Notice it's called helpful.
Helpful, I know.
You have to get involved.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do have to get involved, and that's, like I said, when it's clear that they're not working this out, there's just no way they're going to be able to work it out, then we would get involved, and we're kind of acting as a mediator. So we're not going to decide something like, oh, darn it, darn it, we're just going to mediate. And we might say, you know, Jamie, you know, tell me from your perspective what's going on. And you always ask them to start with, I feel. You know, I feel angry because he did whatever. And then you ask the other child their side of the story. And then you say, okay, guys, what ideas do you have to work this out?
Yeah,
we don't want
good.
To come in with all the ideas. We want to let them figure out what possible resolution could be. And, of course, if they can't work it out, then we might have to offer something up. But that is the process that they learn how to resolve conflict for the future.
Yeah,
No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's so important. I love, like I said, the helpful and, you know, interventions, because, my mom definitely could have used some of those. And I'm sure if my daughter had a sibling, I would definitely need help with that, too. I mean, it's one of the reasons is I like having an only child, actually, because I grew up with so much fighting that it's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But then it's also like, well, am I just being reactive, you know? But anyway, I that's enough about me. But, no, I'm just wondering if there's other people out there who grew up with a lot of fighting, and so they think either I'm going to have no kids or I'm just going to have one because I don't want to deal with all the drama.
Well, and that could be the case. But the other thing that I would suggest to you and to other parents of just one child is that the same strategies can be used with playdates. When the cousins get together,
that's true.
Because they fight as well.
Yes.
So, of course, in a play date situation, the first strategy, of course, is to ignore it. Let them work it out on their own. If you need to get involved, then you do so in a helpful way. But, if you've gone through those strategies, ignoring first, you've done the training to give them some basic conflict resolution skills, maybe you've gotten involved, the helpful adult intervention. If we get to a point where they can't come to an agreement on how we can work this out, then it's time for strategy number 4, which is all in the same boat. And that, as I mentioned, is everyone has the same consequence. And so it sounds... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry about that.
It sounds something like this. Well, if you guys can't work it out on your own and I have to get involved, then everyone is going to lose the privilege of the video game, or everyone loses the privilege to play together. Whatever it happens to be, everybody experiences the same consequence. So you get out of that victim and aggressor role. It doesn't matter who started it. It really just says that if you choose to participate in the squabble, then you're going to have to experience the consequence. And that is so liberating for parents because they get really bogged down with the who started it, who should be at fault crap that our kids kind of get us into.
Yes, but you would have liked that Berenstain Bears book because they said it doesn't matter who started it, let's just fix it together, like they had broken a vase or something. You get the mop, I'll get the bag, you get the vacuum, let's just work it out.
Exactly.
And then
we're more focused on solutions as opposed to blame. And that's where we want our kids to move towards, to be focused on solutions. It's really effective.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up about the playgroup because my daughter's in, she has some special needs. She's in an integrated preschool, and, I'm sure for the most part everyone gets along fine, but I'm sure there's issues that come up, and so I think it's important for only children when they're around other children to have, know these skills, because the kids who do have siblings are going to have, I would think, some advantage. They might fight more, but they're also going to be more directly involved in learning conflict resolution skills, it sounds like.
That's right, and if we never put our kids in situations where they where they can experience conflict, they never learn those skills.
Yes, so I think that's really important. Now, you have something going on, is it this evening, that you can tell us about?
It is, yes. We do free webinars for parents on a variety of different topics. The one tonight is called Get Kids to Listen Without Nagging, Reminding, or Yelling. yes, because we all kind of often get to that point where we're reminding, repeating ourselves, reminding, repeat, and then we blow up, and then we feel terrible afterwards. And so we're going to talk tonight about consequences and how we can structure consequences in a way that kids learn to make a better choice for the future and the parent doesn't end up being the bad guy. And so it's going to be a really great session. And to sign up for it, you have to RSVP. It's 9 to 10 Eastern Time. But parents can go to our website at positiveparentingsolutions.com and get information on the free webinar.
Oh, that's terrific. You do so many wonderful things. And I'm so happy that you're going to be joining us. I'm hoping every other month to talk about a different issue for parents.
I would absolutely love that. As you know, there's so many topics to discuss.
I know.
Yes, we'll never run out of things.
Yeah, the consequence one is, we had made a consequence with something for our daughter, and then, then you don't do it, and then it's nice when you have to do it. I mean, that's the whole thing, and sometimes you just feel bad, or, it seemed too much, but you got to stick with it, so that consistency is really important. Well, I want to thank you, Amy. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Lisa. You finish.
Oh, no, I was just going to thank you for coming on, but I wanted to definitely hear what you were going to say about that.
Well, I was just saying about consequences. So often we just come up with consequences off the top of our head without really thinking through them. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about tonight is the five R's of an effective consequence so that you can feel bad. You don't have to feel bad about it, and you can be consistent with it.
Oh, well, that is fantastic. Amy, thank you so much again. I'll be back tomorrow.
I'll be back on.
And positive experience.com. And if you'd like to reach me, simply go to historyhealthradio.org. Now, stay tuned. In a moment, we'll be joined by Glenda Bacon, PhD. She's the author of Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight. It is a fascinating book. It really goes against a lot of what the mainstream beliefs are about obesity and causes. It's fascinating, and she is a scientist, so it's great. So keep listening. Thanks so much.